What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and we are in the midst of a historic rally in the silver market. I have never seen anything like what happened today. The price of silver up more than 11% at one point in a single trading session. I have never seen this anywhere. And joining us today is Bob Coleman. He is the CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults, and he's going to help us try to make heads or tails of what's going on here. And, you know, Bob, the last time we did this was Black Friday. It was supposed to be my day off. Something broke in the silver markets. The price rallies a couple of bucks. We, you know, we coordinate on Twitter, or we Johnny on the spot this last minute live stream. Here we are, next holiday on the calendar, day after Christmas. It's supposed to be my day off. Not even supposed to be here today. We've got something going on in the silver market again. Bob, we have got to keep meeting like this.
It's been one hell of a week, let alone a year. But this has been absolutely incredible. I mean, if you're short these markets, it's like a religious experience right now that you're having. That's partly what's driving this whole thing right now. It's just a massive short squeeze. It's really coming from the derivatives and options world. If you look at the volatility premiums on SLV options, they went absolutely through the roof. It's something I've been calling for. I've been doing these posts back, I think, in November or early December. I put a post with the VXSLV and showing how high that premium got in October, but relatively, you know, back to where it was back in 2021, 2022, when you had that silver squeeze, you had the premium go. I think that volatility went all the way as high as 120 on the index. And for those that don't know, in October, it went to about 54. And I think today it's like 78 or something like that. This whole thing is doing exactly what I thought would happen. And I've been posting all this. I put a post, I think, in earlier December. I said, you know, could we see 85 by the end of the year? These are all, I posted, back in 2024, we could be looking at the mother of all short squeezes. That's what this stuff looks like. And it develops from a market structure over time. It takes, sometimes it takes time to develop, but I know a lot of people get, really short-sighted, and they get, they look at these 1 hour dive bombs that we have on the price, in the mornings, you gotta look at this stuff more on a longer term basis, more on a multi-daily or weekly type of chart versus not always looking at the short term candles, the hourlies and things like that. But that's what's happened. And the whole thing has basically been mustering up into a massive short squeeze. You had the guy from Daniel from TD calling basically a top in the silver market back in October. Partly he was right for about 2 weeks, and then it just started building again. And these things will manifest, and they will continue to go higher until basically it's exhausted. And that's what a short squeeze really is. It's just, it forces anybody who's short into the market to buy, and then after that, there's no buyers left.
So I like that you touched on that top for 2 weeks that we got in late October, because it was very short-lived, that sell-off. I remember thinking it didn't feel like this rally was done. Now, maybe in the context, if we zoom way out in the calendar in the future, we'll say, oh, this whole rally was this one big thing happening. But at least right now, the move we saw today, to me, felt very different from the London shortage story that we saw playing out earlier this fall. Could you talk a little bit about, like, what are some of the similarities we saw today with some of those prior rallies we saw a few months ago? And more importantly, what's different? Like, I mean, this was just a monster run here, 11% in a day. I've never seen this.
Yeah, if you look at, and you got to be sort of an analytical junkie like me sometimes to watch all these numbers. If you look at Wednesday, we were basically at parity with the future, with the March silver futures contract compared to the spot price in London. The prices were basically identical. So you had a parity with those two, where initially, well, in reality, the March silver futures should be about 60 cents higher, 65 cents higher, because you're talking about time value money. It's 3 months out, yada, yada. Now what you have is we went from parity to about almost a 40 cent back to a contango again. And my guess is today you basically saw And you'll probably see this on Monday, open interest starting to increase on the silver market. I'm probably, my guessing is you're probably seeing longs coming into the market finally. And that probably was pushing the futures market up relative to the spot price. Because when you've got to remember, the futures market outperformed the spot price today by about 40 cents because it was at parity on Wednesday.
So if I could just show people that real quick, what we're looking at here on investing.com, here's your March silver futures at 79.62, up 11.07% as of right now. Blink and you missed it. And then down here, XAG USD, there's your spot price in London, 79.34, up 10.4%. So we've got the futures market is dragging the spot market higher. And that's pretty different, right? Back in October, November, we saw spot go as much as $3 higher than what the futures price was. So this feels very different. We're watching the price rally, but it seems like a very different mechanism dragging us higher.
Yeah, and this is part of the issue. Me as a money manager, you know, people have to remember I run a hedge fund. I look at this stuff daily. I crunch a lot of different types of numbers. You know, the posts that I do, it takes a lot of work and effort to try to put this stuff together, to draw the sort of the maps and the pictures and sort of the you know, the commentary and so forth to try and explain what's happening. Because for a lot of people, this is very esoteric stuff. It's, you know, and I have to apologize. Some of my posts, you know, they may be cryptic to many people, but what I'm trying to do is to paint that picture to give people an idea of what to maybe expect going forward. And not the sort of fear-mongering approach and, you know, the dollar is going to take a nosedive and, you know, everything's going to be run from a foreign country and, you know, and we're not going to have any metals left here in the U.S. I don't like that narrative at all. I like to try to explain things as if, I'm trying to explain to just a normal client whether the price goes up or down. You're trying to talk some type of language that they can make some kind of sense with. You know, because if the price goes down $10 tomorrow, the narrative that I'm just buying because the price goes up kind of goes away. And all of a sudden, the client may feel like, wait a second, I just bought for the wrong reason. So I try to give a little bit more meaning, I guess, with what I see happening underneath the surface. And that's sort of what we're seeing now is this traditional short squeeze that has manifested itself. You're talking end of the year, light liquidity. Banks have been curtailing their balance sheet exposure. You probably have, my guess is, you probably had mining companies that were probably hedging, you know, mid, you know, going into December, probably locking in profits, you know, on potential ounces are pulling out of the ground. So they probably started hedging and all this types of stuff. It starts to affect where all of a sudden you get the squeeze in the futures markets. That squeeze can hurt anybody, you know, whether you're hedged or whether you're just naked short, expecting maybe a secular move down. You either have to pony up more money or your hedge book's losing money. And so sometimes, you know, you may have to blow out of that hedge that you just put on because it's just going up too fast against relative to the ounces that you haven't pulled out of the ground yet. So these are all things to watch for as you get into this melt-up scenario. And you see it with the options market. You know, again, we talked about VXSLV, the option, the volatility premium on SLV options through the roof, all-time high this year. It wasn't a purely high. That high was actually back in 2021. I think when you got to about 120 on that index. Today, you know, again, it closed around 77, 78. So
could you pause on that real quick, if you don't mind? Because that's the second time you mentioned the options volatility from SLV. And could you maybe elaborate a little bit more, like what is that statistic measuring, right? So the volatility of the options premium derived from the SLV ETF, is that?
Yeah, it's when you look at volatility premium, that's the, you know, when you talk about like a gamma squeeze, for example, you have intrinsic value of the option, you have time value, and then you have volatility. And so what happens is as the buying and volume of options, the call options start to swell and increase, all of a sudden the premiums, the volatility starts in the metals. It's been weird. Usually volatility, when volatility goes up, like the VIX ratio, that type of thing, usually means the stock market's taken a nosedive and volatility goes up. But in the metals markets, really the last couple of years, it's been the exact opposite. When prices go up, volatility rises. And so with this increasing volume in call option buying, it forces the dealers who are short calls to now either go in and buy calls, or they go in and buy more underloading. And I think what happened in October was the dealers went in and bought more underlying, though they may have been short they may have been short the underlying SLV itself. But when that call buying came in, basically, they had to hedge somehow. So typically, they buy call options or they buy more underlying SLV. And so what you have here now, though, is instead of like in October, like you mentioned, we were in a backwardation where the futures market was $2 or $3 below the spot price. Here you have sort of the opposite happening. The contango is now starting to blossom or build out. So in this case, this call buying that's coming in and the volatility that's rising, and it's just attracting more sort of delta neutral type hedging. Either the dealers are caught short, or there are guys that have been maybe shorting against maybe the underlying with short calls, for example, against an underlying position. And maybe they don't want to give up the underlying position, so they have to buy back the calls. There's a myriad of different reasons why the increase in call activity could be happening. But what's happening, though, is it's creating higher volatility premiums, and that is also increasing the price of that underlying option as well. And that's the part that gets this gamma squeeze going, because you have an increasing intrinsic value, you have also increasing volatility premium, and that call option is getting more expensive as the price goes up.
So if I could be ultra simplistic about this rally we saw today is being driven by the derivatives market, by the paper, versus the rally we saw earlier was an actual physical shortage in London, and then the paper market and the COMEX was drained to kind of alleviate that. So now we've got a paper, some kind of ruckus in the paper market. And I think your post today feeds into this. And as I'm going to throw this post up, I'm also going to throw up this comment from Pasta Man, which is pretty interesting. And I kind of see this kind of along the same lines here. So you can weigh in on this whole situation together. First of all, thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. And I see some other you guys in there. Also, we'll get to you guys. If any of you members are watching, remember, you guys get a free super chat every month. If you've got one of those and you want Bob to respond to your questions, put him on the spot. By all means, use it. But Bob's post, this post today, and when I tried to put my finger on what was driving the metals move today, I arrived at China also before I even saw this post. You say China's only pure play silver fund, the UBS SDIC Silver Futures Fund, implemented stricter controls on new subscriptions, reducing the limit for Class C shares from 500 yuan to 100 yuan. Please note this fund invests in futures, not physical metal. And then I clicked on the article here, and they're talking about this. This is kind of counterintuitive here. This China Silver Futures Fund plunges 10% after bull run warnings. So there's a lot going on in this article here. Like, okay, we're messing with the market. It seems like we're taking away the buy button. The fund is going down, but we're watching the silver price rip. What's going on here, Bob?
Well, what I think what's happening, and this is why I'm saying it's a derivatives-driven rally, is because there is so much money coming into the sector. There's an old saying, there's no fever like gold fever. Well, silver is a different beast altogether. I mean, that's the redheaded stepchild. And of course, then you have platinum, who's the adopted redheaded stepchild when it comes to volatility. But what's happening with silver, I think, is the problem they ran in China was because of all this money flow coming in, and they were only buying futures contracts, and they're going in, and you have to remember, in a light liquidity environment, they buy no matter what. It's a passive type strategy where they just get the flow of capital. That flow of capital has to get invested. It doesn't care what price it is at. It just buys. And the same thing happens when the flow of capital goes out the other way. It just sells. And so it creates this sort of massive sort of swing where, this fund, if I remember correctly, I think it was a massive premium to its different.
62% to net asset
Yeah.
value. That's
Yeah. And so,
crazy how
yeah.
much they
And
bid
so,
this thing up. Yeah.
yeah. So I think this was up like 200, 200%, I think, on the year or something like that, whereas silver was up like 100 something percent. So these are the realities of the paper markets. And when you start seeing this type of activity, a lot of it is simply a lot of concentrated capital flow going into a very small market. And that's that without trying to strip away about 99% of the crap that you see on social media the last 2 weeks, this is the reality of how the markets work. And money talks. And in the precious metals world, especially when you get, to a period of light liquidity where a lot of the players have pulled back from the markets, so a lot of the banks maybe not making as much of a depth of a market as maybe they would, outside of the last 2 weeks of the year. These types of things can take life on its own, and anybody who's short, unfortunately, just like if we made a solid beeline move to the downside, well, when you're going and you're short the market, all of a sudden you're looking at potentially losses to infinity, because that's the risk to a short. You have to start taking your beatings and start covering. You're forced to buy, and that forced to buy at any price is what creates the short squeeze that we're seeing today.
So we had some kind of a short squeeze, I'm guessing, in this Chinese fund, and this is a futures ETF, not a metal ETF. So it's a derivative of a derivative. So that's interesting. And then we've got a derivative of that causing a squeeze. Trades at a 62% premium to the net asset value in the fund. Typically, when an ETF trades at such a big premium, they'll issue new shares and go out and buy more of the underlying with the money there until they come back into balance. And so I think what Pasta is alluding to here in his comment, he's saying, well, we see the closing of the silver export window speech a la Nixon preventing west to east flows. I've watched the Shanghai futures price close above $80 several days in a row now. We're well into the mid 80s in Shanghai. So naturally, you would expect a flow of metal from west to east, like we saw from New York to London to alleviate that arbitrage back in October. So, are we going to see that same movement of metal? And if we get that enough, could we see a scenario that Pasta is describing here where the government steps in to try to somehow prevent that flow of metal to keep the money from going where it's treated best, as you have often said here?
Yeah, it's a good question. You have to remember, is this a futures-driven rally or is it a physical-driven rally? I mean, you have the Shanghai Futures Exchange and you have the Shanghai Gold Exchange, and those are two separate vehicles. If it's futures related, it's the easiest thing you can do is, like we saw here in the United States with GameStop, and then of course during 1980 during the Hunt Brothers price fiasco, I guess you could call it. Back then the COMEX went to a sell and close only order. You couldn't buy, and of course you saw that happen with Robinhood, where they went to a sell and close only with GameStop and some other stocks, forcing really, or cutting off, I should say, the buying or the fuel for the fire. And so you can do that with the futures market and simply go, and that's what it looks like. China is trying to warn people about in terms of speculation and so forth, is that, if that does happen, you could see a vacuum to the downside very quickly, where people are just, although the only thing they can do is sell, they can't buy. And that's something you want to be very careful of. There's a lot of hysteria right now in the market, especially you see on social media, especially with AI and some of the stuff that clients are just sending me. I'm just getting barraged by this stuff, trying to filter through it and say, listen, this is just complete garbage. You just want to be careful of the dynamics. Whatever goes up fast can pull back just as easily.
So, is there some kind of geopolitical war over currency and metal being raged right now that's creating this dislocation and this big geographical arbitrage? I mean, I've already got the tinfoil on today, and we're sitting here talking about nearly $80 silver. So let's get a little funky, a little wild here. is there some geopolitical struggle going on behind the scenes? Or is this really just somebody got caught short and now he's getting squeezed and he made a mess in the market?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, you know, guys that, or should say guys, funds or structures that were put in place, structured products. You have to remember, a lot of people were playing the gold-silver ratio and may have been more favored to gold and not as much favored to silver. So you were short silver, long gold, and all of a sudden that ratio is collapsing. So you got an unwinding that's happening there. At the same time, you have that unwinding. You have now guys that are saying, listen, I think I'm going to pile in on silver and short gold because I, you know, that gold silver ratio is collapsing so fast, I can make money, you know, vis-a-vis, you know, that relative trade. And so you have a lot of things that are happening, and this is what makes a market a market. You have multiple things happening at the same time. Geopolitically, yes, you have you know, silver on the critical metals list. You know, there's obviously a political narrative to try to protect you know, the silver and so forth, or other metals. But I don't know, you know, that's a 10,000 foot view type of thing. You know, you're looking at, right now you're just looking at market structures, and you're looking at volatility premiums, and you're looking at, you know, the movement between spreads and so forth. And it's telling you that this is more of a, maybe short term, more of a short squeeze than maybe the longer term picture, which your viewer may be alluding to.
Is there anything, is there metal getting on planes right now? Is the arbitrage big enough where that's happening? Like it's going from London to Shanghai or New York to Shanghai yet?
I mean, it could be going from, I guess, from London to Shanghai if the spreads were wide enough. It certainly is not going from New York to London, that's for sure.
You haven't seen that. Well, yeah, because of contango again, right?
Yeah, the contango, and you started to see that kind of slow down, even though the metal has been leaving the COMEX. You're down what, to 123 million ounces, I think, in the Rothschild category, something like that. So you are seeing the metal reduce, and it's flowing where it's best treated. But you know, if the ETF flows are still very strong into London, that metal may stay in London because it has to meet that demand that's coming in. You certainly don't see the borrowing fees to short SLV shares where they were in October. You know, these are very, very benign numbers now. There's not much stress and risk in the London market right now from a borrowing fee perspective. Yes, lease rates may be a little bit higher, maybe due to some of the year-end activity, and you may not have maybe some of the refiners and so forth are slowing down, you know, because of the holiday season, who knows. But I think the issue of this, you know, the makeup of this rally here is much different than it was in October.
Yeah, I kind of figured, like, I envisioned this ripple moving across a pond, right? It was in London a couple months ago. Now it's in Shanghai. Are we going to be back? I don't know, what, on the day after Easter, are we going to be talking about New York, something going on there? That seems to be, it's just these dislocations moving around the world. And real quick, by the way, I just want to say thank you, Frank Oz, Frank300ZX, for gifting 20 memberships. Appreciate that very much, Frank. Thank you for supporting the channel. And remember, you guys, you members, if you got one of those memberships, you can ask a question with that super chat and we will read and respond to your question. Ewok jerky, which is sounds both delicious and heartbreaking at the same time, as a Star Wars guy. He's saying he's watching a currency collapse in real time. You know, that there is a lot of talk like this, that, you know, this is just the inevitable result of expanding money supplies and the money printing of the COVID. I mean, when you, a lot of people are buying metal from you, I'm sure, right now. Your phone was probably ringing off the hook, which, again, thank you for making the time to talk to us today. I'm sure you're busy as all get out. Are people talking about the Fed and the turning on of the money printer again very quietly? That happened a few weeks ago, or are people just buying because number go up right now?
Yeah, part of this is, you know, it used to be like when, you know, the old adage, if you love it at 50 and it drops to 25, it's like, if you like it at 50, you love it at 25. Here in the metals, if you like it at 50, you love it at 80. And this type of groundswell of buying that's come in has been, I think, part of this is people that have been sitting on the couch thinking, okay, we're going to get a pullback. I can't buy it at 60. I can't buy it at 65. My God, it's at 70. I can't buy it. And then at some point you hit your mark of saying, listen, I relent. I give up. I'm gonna finally buy, or the guy on YouTube has finally convinced me that the end of the world's gonna happen, or something's gonna happen where silver goes to $5,000 an ounce, and whatever it may be. There's a lot, obviously, price targets of $200 silver that's been pushed into the social media sphere like there's no tomorrow. Those types of things. Especially with prices going up, really, it's the price going up and that FOMO, that fear of missing out, I think, is what I think drives the Western investor. Whereas the Eastern investor tends to not chase the market; they let the market pull back and let it come to them. But yeah, in China, it's been an interesting story because it's been a lot of buying by the public, a lot of speculative buying. The idea of buying these 15 gram bars and so forth, or 15 kilogram bars, and just holding on to them with the idea that this thing's going to go that much higher and I can sell it to somebody else at a higher price. So you get that sort of almost madness of crowds, I guess you could say.
I can see that. And, I just messed with my screen, so I can't really see what I'm doing right now. This is the second time in a couple of days I did that. StreamYard messed with their interface. But I want to show this comment here because, I really don't know what I hit. Chris Bott. Thank you, Chris. He said, libertarian Bitcoin goddess is swapping out her Bitcoin for SLV calls. And he's making a reference to this video I made about Zhimin Zhiman, a name I really struggled to pronounce during this video. This kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment here. This Chinese woman ran a scam, stole $7 billion of Bitcoin in China, fled to the UK, and the UK seized her Bitcoin. She wanted to buy a crown and scepter and rule over Liberland, this libertarian paradise. Pretty wild story. And so he's referencing this, saying that she's dumping her Bitcoin for SLV calls. Let me ask you this on this subject, could this, or at least part of this rally, be some of this Bitcoin money looking for a new place to hide? Because crypto is obviously not doing great here. And, the ongoing war between, the Peter Schiff's and the, I don't know, who's the Bitcoin guy out there? I don't know, pick one of your Bitcoin people. But the Bitcoin gold war, is that at play here? Maybe crypto's just not doing well?
Definitely. I mean, money managers, traders, I mean, everyone's trying to make money at the end of the day. The interesting thing about assets, especially commodities, it's very common to see these ratio or relative value trades be put on. So you may be, let's say you're playing at the basement game and you're saying, listen, based over the last few years, Bitcoin has outperformed gold by so many X's or whatever it may be. So I'm going to say, listen, I'm going to buy Bitcoin and I'm going to short gold. So if I'm wrong, I have a hedge in place that, that the basement trade may blow up in my face and all of a sudden Bitcoin and gold both go down. Well, gold goes down, I make a little bit of money on that and I lose on the Bitcoin. But my whole hope of that trade was that Bitcoin would outperform gold on the upside. And that thing has just blown up. So now you have these ratio trades where now you have to maybe buy back the gold and you have to sell the Bitcoin. And so that's how a lot of these, on Wall Street and in the hedge fund world and so forth, that's how a lot of these trades are put on. Sometimes they're secular trades. Sometimes it's just saying, hey, listen, I believe in gold, or I think gold's going to go, back to 2000. And so you'll just put on some type of either short, or you'll put on some type of secular long trade. So, but all these types of situations, you can start to see it measured in these spreads and, like the EFP, and you look at the volatility premiums and these options and so forth. They start to give sort of, breadcrumbs that you can start to follow a little bit to understand maybe the bigger picture.
And along those same lines of, arbitrage trades, or this starts to do poorly, so there's an opposite reaction elsewhere in the market. Possum Man saying, I believe Eve, it's a bank run for the wealthy. And when I hear about a bank run here, that's kind of interesting, because this year we have seen some pretty high profile guys, some big fund managers have come out and called for some rather aggressive allocations to gold that I've never heard. Like guys like Dalio and Gundlach have been calling for, I think the highest I heard was 35% allocation to gold. And possibly a lot of 60-40 portfolio money looking for a place to hide in metals because of negative real yields. That kind of does resemble a bank run for the wealthy, doesn't it? If more wealth starts to move and hide in metals here, you know, has that already played out? Because we were hearing a lot about portfolio allocation back over the summer. I don't hear it much now, even though metals are running even harder than they were over the summer. So is that going on too still?
No, I think that's been going on. The worry that I would have, you know, being an investment advisor, you know, since 1992, I mean, when you look at this, take a step back from an investment advisor's perspective, metals have had a tremendous year. I mean, the move in platinum and silver alone was north of 150 or 160% this year, just enormous. You're going to have a reweighting, a reallocation going into the new year. And if one asset vastly outperforms other assets, that means that asset now, gold and silver, for example, may be a higher weighting of a portfolio that needs to be tailed back a little bit. It's not to say this is the banksters, this is, you know, the shorts coming in, going to clobber the market. This is just simply a reweighting of, you know, the outperformance of the metals now is too much of a weight to, you know, maybe the average portfolio. And so that's something to consider, you know, going after the new year, just to watch out for, because that can create that selling, and maybe in the ETFs and that type of thing, that may be where the money's parked. Who knows? Or you may want to say, listen, I don't want to take the gain in 2025. I'll wait another week and I'll take the gain in 2026. These are very common money management skills that you see, not just in the metals markets, but in the stock market. You see it in currencies. You see it in a lot of different types of environments. Where things get pushed out into the new year, from a tax perspective.
So that was a really good point there. You know, you mentioned the turn of the year coming around, and quite often we see the best performing fund in one year ends up being the worst performing fund a year later. You get the sector rotations here, and metals has had just a monster run here. And I'm a nuke. I'm careful. I'm always cautious. I always see disaster lurking around every corner, even when it isn't there. So how real is that risk that all this sentiment just turns on a dime as soon as the calendar goes January?
I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, these are all things that you have to watch for. I mean, I run a hedge fund. I mean, for full disclosure, I mean, I'm heavily weighted to silver, and the price is getting up to where, you know, beginning of this year I was focused on 65. I thought that's where the number could get to, and then I think in December, early December, I put a post out saying, and I did an interview, I said, could we see 85 by the end of the year? Having this type of sort of game plan, you know, sometimes you don't want to get too greedy. You know, you want to start to scale, whether you're been in it for a long time, or if you're, you know, if you haven't been in it at all, and you're just trying to develop your portfolio and you're just dollar cost averaging, yeah, you stick with your plan and you dollar cost average. But yeah, you know, managing a hedge fund and managing money professionally, you know, your job is also to try to protect those profits. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, I mean, the fund's up well over 100% this year, and it's been not using derivatives, not using options. It's solely been with metal, physical metal held, you know, paid by cash. You know, and that patience has sort of paid off. But again, you're trying to look at the longer term picture, and sometimes going a little bit to cash is not a bad thing. It's defensive, and you know, who knows? I mean, the price could pull back and then you redeploy that cash again. You know, I don't think the move for the metals is over. The concern I have longer term, I think with many of your listeners as well, is that, you know, I think the dollar is going to have to come under further pressure at down the road. There's no way around it, because of the debt structure, and, you know, trying to get interest rates down and that type of thing needs more money printing in order to drive interest rates lower. That's just simple math. And so from that perspective, if you're a long-term investor, you know, these are, I mean, it's exciting times, but you know, you just want to have that longer term time frame. Don't get too caught up in some of this, you know, this massive volatility.
You know, speaking of the massive volatility, thank you, James. James said a couple days ago that he'd see us Friday, you know, when I joked about taking the day off. And, you know, some of these numbers, like the ink's not even dry on 60. We've already hit 70. We're talking about 80 here. I haven't sold an ounce of my metal, but I did take some profits today and some SLV calls because I looked and I'd be kicking myself if I didn't. So I kind of kicking and screaming forced myself to take 675% profits on the SLV calls that I bought. So there's that options volatility that you're talking about. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not about to quit my day job. It wasn't a huge amount wagered here, but hey, I'm happy with the return. So you got to be careful, right? I mean, with anytime you're seeing things go vertical like this, I mean, I'm as bullish long-term metals as anybody, but we've seen this vertical move. We saw it in 2011. We saw it in 80. Is there any reason to believe that, at risk of sounding cliche, that this time might be different, that there isn't an equal and opposite move down coming right around the corner?
I don't know if it's an equal opposite move coming down. And I hate when people say it's different this time. That makes me want to run
there, yeah.
In the opposite direction. No, I don't think that this is if you look at the monthly and the weekly charts and you look at the Bollinger Band, you just keep life simple. You know, look at the relative strength. Yes, we're overbought. We can stay overbought. I mean, we've been overbought since what, October? And we had the pullback. We had sort of a, you know, it worked off on the daily chart. It worked off some of that extreme. And then now we're back into, you know, big time overbought. But if you look at the weekly and the monthly charts, we've been overbought since October, and it just keeps piling. It keeps going, and that's the problem with the short squeeze. Is that, and I did a post. And I did this little yellow box. You know, this was, I think, right at the end of November, and I said, based on 2010, 2011 scenario, I think we could actually see the next leg higher. That's exactly what we got. Is this next leg higher? So, you know, just stick to a plan. That's all I have to say. If you're a short-term trader, yes, you want to take advantage of these high volatility premiums, because your call option is not just based on intrinsic value. It's also based on volatility premium, which has gone through the roof, which is increasing the price of your option as well. So take advantage of it. You know, that's what it's all about. So the problem is when the market pulls back, that volatility premium could collapse, and so the option will drop faster at an accelerated amount of money in a very short period of time. So you want to be careful, you know, if you're short-term trading versus long-term sort of buy and hold. But no, I think, you know, for the average individual out there, you know, just having a plan, saying, listen, I bought this as a 5-year time frame, that, you know, that's what I'm looking at. You know, if it, you know, it's gone up tremendously this year, you can never go broke taking a profit. You know, don't beat yourself up if you're like, I sold it at 60, or I sold it at 65, or I sold it at 50. You know, if you made money, you made money. That's what's important in this game, is just not getting slaughtered. So looking at this from that perspective, yes, it's nice if we go to 200 on silver and you hold, you know, 100% of your position all the way through that volatility. That's wonderful. But you know, a lot of people may not have that fortitude. You know, we could go from, you know, up to $100 an ounce, and we could drop to 50 or 55, and then it just goes up another $60. I mean, those types of swings are impossible to time and maybe to completely take advantage of. I mean, I was telling a client earlier, you know, one thing I do give a lot of applause to is, you know, the Bitcoin investors that have held through those drawdowns and, you know, incredible amount of volatility, and to stay in that position that whole time was just incredible. I mean, I've never seen anything like it when you have, you know, multiple 90% drawdowns and, you know, a year later, you're up 2x. I mean, it's just incredible. So, you know, have that type of fortitude. You know, try not to get too caught up in a lot of the hype and hoopla. You know, I don't think the government's going to confiscate silver. You know, it's, you know, if you look at what the government's doing, they're actually taking passive investments in mining operations to try to secure strategic assets. And I think that is the name of the game. They're not going to go door to door. If they're going to do anything, they could simply go to an ETF like the SLV and cash settle it, take all the silver if they wanted to do something like that. And then all of a sudden, the investors would have the capital gain to worry about. So they'd be paying taxes. So it actually would be more beneficial for the government to go after an ETF or the futures markets and pull metal that way than to actually try to go door to door, which I don't think they would.
So you touched on the miners there. And we got this one from Dan Hedin. Thank you, Dan, for supporting the channel. And he's, first of all, thank you, Bob, for coming on. Now he's talking about, can Samsung looking to buy a Mexican silver mine for their new solid state battery possibly be driving any of this? Now, I didn't hear about, I thought Samsung had bought a Canadian mine recently. I don't know if they bought a Mexican mine also, or maybe I'm just remembering it wrong, but I did hear about Samsung buying a silver mine. Is that having an impact on the futures market here in this move on price here, or is that just one of these, hey, that's also going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, that could have been what has pressured, you know, silver from, you know, the August timeframe up to October. It could have been the underlying sort of wind to the back of this entire market, you know, through 2025 as industry tries to secure assets, not just silver, but anything, copper, any of these types of metals and materials and minerals for production purposes. So, yeah, that's something I've raised a number of times, you know, could, you know, this silver battery, which, you know, could be very revolutionary to the electric car industry. It's going to take a lot of material, obviously, to make it. So you have to start almost scale in buying, you know, well in advance. You can't just simply call up JP Morgan's desk and say, I want to buy, you know, 100 million ounces of silver. You know, maybe they, you know, they could source it. But the problem is you would have a market dislocation if someone came in that, you know, that fast. So, you know, by this accumulation of buying by industry, you know, that I think has been sort of this sort of, just like central bank buying in gold, it's sort of been this foundation that the market could build from.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and feed the geopolitical conspiracy guys a little bit in true tinfoil spirit, because if it is EVs and this new solid state battery, which is the key to unlocking additional range and rapid charging and electric vehicles, you know who the biggest manufacturer of EVs in the world is? It's the Chinese, isn't it? And that's what the source of the ruction in the futures market right now is, China. Interesting coincidence there. Thank you very much, Dan, for that question. I appreciate that. We got a few more. Atomic Coyote. This is a subject I wanted to touch on today. The gold to silver ratio. He's saying pick a number where before retracing. Now, we were talking just on Twitter the other day. You answered a post of mine about the gold to silver ratio. And you mentioned that support gets weaker every time it's hit. And let's show the gold to silver ratio here. I showed this chart a number of times on some of my morning live streams over the last couple of weeks and months. And, you know, I was planning, let's set this to, yeah, we'll leave it at weeks. I was planning to trade some of my silver for gold at 75 on the GSR. Life had other plans. I got busy. I didn't do it. I was planning on doing it again at 65. Didn't do it. Life had other plans. Got busy. Here we are at 57.1. And, you know, I'll point to this other time here that we hit this support level right around 65, which coincidentally is about the average of the last 45 years, roughly my lifespan. 65 has pretty much been the average GSR. So how much lower are we going to go here, Bob? Give me a number. I mean, is this a fool's errand to even try to pick one, or do you have a target in mind?
My target at the beginning of the year was the 50s. That's what I was looking for. 65 on silver, 50s on the GSR. And of course, obviously gold going higher where it was relative to silver. Obviously, you know, silver had to just simply go higher in price if you're going to get into the 50s on the gold silver ratio. I still think longer term the ratio goes probably into the 30s to 20s to 1. It just as much as it got extreme to the upside to 125 to 1 back in 2020, it got to 107 to 1 earlier this year. It's not uncommon to obviously see it get like a rubber band, it snaps, it goes back the other direction, just as extreme. So it could get, I think back in 2011, it got to 33 to 1. So getting into low 30s and even into the 20s is probably where ultimately silver goes. But, that move will probably be, I think, after maybe you have some type of, big pullback, whether it's a general market event or but something that maybe draws down the price a little bit and rebuilds. You definitely want to see the market. You don't want to see this thing go straight to the, to the moon. I mean, in that type of world, that's what you call it, just a massive blow off. And you really have to protect capital at that point, unless, we're into a new paradigm where silver is really truly becoming, much more restrictive, less mining output, so forth, more industry capacity or more industry usage. But I think, the big thing right here is just trying to stay in perspective to what your goals are, whether it's short term, medium term, long term, and be happy, follow that plan and be happy with that performance. Now, as a money manager, I may scale out of some of the silver because I overweighted to begin with. I mean, I went big into silver in, 2020 when the gold silver ratio, blew out. And my whole thinking was at some point silver is going to be that shining star that's going to play catch up, and it plays catch up very fast. And that's exactly what's happened. So, just try to stay in perspective to what you're looking at. If it's, if your whole game plan is, hey, listen, this is metal that's just going to get passed down to the next generation, you're just buying it to put it away. You really don't care about the price action, for that. And in that type of instance, it's just simply an insurance policy.
All right. So 30 to 1 possible. Now, you said long term. So next 5 years, next 10 years, next week?
So some of these option traders, that would be probably long term, a week out. I think if we went into like Sunday night, the way this thing closed, obviously, if you're short, you're looking at a gap up on Sunday night, the only thing that can start to curtail this market to slow it down would be some sort of government action or exchange action, which again, you go to a sell on close only type of system where they tried to, today they increased margin rates. I posted on that on the CME for not only gold and silver, but platinum and palladium. Partly why they increase margin rates, one is because the asset price is so much higher. So that increase in margin relative to the increase in the price kind of goes hand in hand. But also you increase margin to try to remove some of the leverage that's sort of built into these contracts. Now, you have to remember, these margin hikes that they've been doing all year have had very little effect because the loser has been primarily on the short side of the market. So when you increase margin, you also have to increase the margin that the short side is also adhering to. So they have to pony up more money to maintain that position. And that could also, what we've seen is that forces them out of that position if they can't meet that margin requirement. They're forced to buy.
So these margin requirements are distributed evenly. They don't say longs need to post more, shorts don't. This is either side of the table has to post that extra money, huh?
Yeah, and you have to remember that what I posted today is what the CME puts out as the baseline. The clearing firms, who the retail or professional trader trades with, the brokerage firm or the futures clearing firm, they post their own. So if they see more risk themselves, they'll actually up the ante of what's required. And if you're wanting to come in on the short side, just like we saw borrowing fees being very high in SLV in October, they may be a little bit more extreme on the margin requirements for shorting versus going long, for example. So those are just things to try to understand, how these market instruments kind of work within the financial system.
All right, we're going to go quickly through a couple of these because I'm backing up a little bit here. Armando saying, hey, you guys, and to that all I can say is sloth love chunk. Thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel. Jesse James saying, thank you, Jack, for all your excellent analysis. I'm going to go ahead and put Bob in there too. Thank you, Bob, for yours as well. He says, I think we're looking at weeks where decades happen, to quote Lenin. You know, it's funny because the pasta man said something very similar today, that there are years when nothing happens or decades when nothing happens, and then weeks when decades happen. I'm sure I butchered that quote, but we're certainly living through that. It does feel like watching history today. End of the fiat system is what we're seeing, gents. Great coverage of Lindsay, Oklahoma. End of the fiat. That's a bit much. I mean, we're watching fiat decline, certainly, at least relative to the shiny here. But I don't see people out there bartering with metal yet. I don't see people trying to break off pieces of gold bars at Walmart for trading. So, you know, fiat system is still the only game in town for most exchanges. That being said, how many of you guys out there, show of hands in the comments or show of live chat, how many of you guys got a call from that person who told you were nuts a few years ago when you told them you were buying gold and silver? How many of you got a text or a call or saw them in person over the holiday and said, should I buy it now? Right? You were nuts to buy it at 15. You were nuts to buy it at 20 and 25. Now here we are pushing 80, and the guy who told you were nuts is talking about buying it himself. Interesting. Sign of the times. Armando again saying, I have one serious concern that the government will not let stackers and private owners become wealthy. They'll screw us somehow, some way. You know, that nihilism, I see that particularly rampant among Gen Z and millennials, and I think it's well-deserved. We've seen Mr. Tampi. We're seeing a margin increase right now. We're seeing the Chinese play games. I mean, is there anything that they're going to do that they haven't already done to try to tamp down the enthusiasm for this rally, or is this just going to run its course?
Yeah, you have to let it run its course. You know, we talked about this the last time we did our emergency podcast, where I talked about how silver, as it's moving higher, will spend less time in each decade, meaning it spent a lot of time in the 20s, it spent a lot less time in the 30s, a lot less time in the 40s, got to the 50s, it bounced up, came down, but bounced right through it. In the 60s, it was very, very quick. 70s, even quicker. But that charting that type of move is what you call a parabolic type of move. And you see it in the charts, how it's just gone straight up like a hockey stick. And again, you have to take all this stuff in with a grain of salt. What creates that hockey stick is most of the time a short squeeze. It's not necessarily right now the end of the fiat system. I certainly, just for my kids' sake, and I think for all of our sakes, I hope it's not the end of the fiat system, because I don't know what the grocery store shelves are going to look like if something like that does happen. But the thing I would be concerned over is the price of oil. I think if you're a metals investor and you look at relative, like silver, for example, I did a little bit of research back in 2008 when I was looking at silver and gold as an investment, investments back then for my fund. And prior to, the 50 years prior to 2008, basically an ounce of silver equaled about 4 gallons of gas. That was the average price. You know, now today, an ounce of silver is more than a barrel of oil. And so from a relative value standpoint, you need to start taking a lot of different things in at the same time. And yes, gold relative to silver, silver is still very cheap relative to gold. But these are all things that, there's a lot of moving parts here. And I just want your viewers to kind of just take all this stuff in when they're analyzing their portfolio. Because if oil starts to rise, which this is what should happen, now all of a sudden, if you're held in miners, the cost of mining is going to start rising. And so their profit margins are going to get squeezed, vis-a-vis the price of metals stay where they're at. So these are things to watch out for when you're trading mining stocks, for example, versus owning physical metal.
You know, Bob, somewhere in New Jersey at a pub, my dad is slapping the table, if he's watching, slapping the table, laughing obnoxiously loud, probably turning a lot of heads, because it was just this morning we were talking about silver to gasoline And we took my sister and my niece and nephew through the minimum wage and what the ounces of what the silver coinage was worth back then and what it would be today. And Dad did his spiel about a gallon of gasoline was about a quarter back then. And so, you know, and here you go. You said almost exactly the same thing on the same day. That's pretty wild. And yeah, the silver to a barrel of oil. That's amazing. When you get the same information from two independent sources at the same time, that's providence, if
that,
you will.
That's what you call the NSA and the CIA working together in unison right there.
How did you know my dad was in the CIA? No. we're going to go quick again. Paul Tudor Jones. Have you heard of anything else? Clueless Panther, thank you for supporting the channel. He said, did Paul Tudor Jones bring an army of speculators? Have you heard anything else about PTJ and his $2 billion silver buy since our last meeting?
I'd heard silver had taken a beating when it was around 64, 65, and it dropped to like 62 or 61 on the charts. And I heard that there was some selling that was going on. And you have to remember, he does more on the paper side, options and futures. So for him, timing is more critical than time in the market. So, but I'd heard that there was some selling or profit taking, in part of the portfolio. And that, of course, you have to remember, when these guys get into the market, they're very laddered in not only their maturities of options and the futures contracts, and they have different time frames or different windows for different parts of the portfolio. So, for them, taking a short-term profit on maybe a more near-term oriented contract is very, very common. It doesn't mean they're just going to blow out the rest of the portfolio all at the same time. So, it kind of was telling in mid-December when you start to see volumes get weaker, and it's very typical. Holiday season's coming up, fewer people are trading, more people are focused on family and year-end bonuses, and just trying to lock down the portfolio and just say, listen, I'm going to take the rest of the couple of weeks off. So volume just dries up just generally. And so any type of big move that comes into the market has a much more outsized effect. And that's exactly what we've seen this week with very, very light volumes. And next week is going to be somewhat similar, where you're going to have, going into New Year's, a lot of people are probably trying to take as much extended time between Christmas and New Year's as possible. So you tend to get that. And then most people, again, are not trading the last few days of the year. They don't want to screw up the portfolio. They certainly don't want to recognize any gains if they didn't have to. So they'll push that off to the new year.
Well, Vacation Time is saying here that silver will soon dethrone NVIDIA as the number two asset by market cap in 2026. And all I can say is, Vacation Time, don't threaten me with a good time. Maybe I'll be taking lots of days off. We should just take more time off, Bob, because the more time off we take, the more we end up doing this. All right. Somebody mentioned starting a GoFundMe for Jack to take a week-long vacation in the chat earlier today. Silver would be $200 by the time I get home.
You could almost call this holiday arbitrage. As you approach a holiday, you start buying calls at no matter whatever strike price.
When's the next New Year's Day? There you go. New Year's Day is the next. Do we go by government holidays? Do we go by that? Armando asking, is Elon buying silver? Who supplies Elon? How much silver is in his rockets? Is the government supplying Elon? I think Elon probably does use some silver. I don't think as much as most people would think. Maybe he's doing the solid state battery tech also. But if those batteries do become common, Elon would certainly be in the market for it. But not the silver whale yet. This is one I'm not sure of. I've never heard of this one. iShares Silver, SLVON, Crypto Mirrors SLV. Have you ever heard of that ticker, Silvon?
No. Uh-huh.
Well, Mr. Green, I'm sorry, sir. I don't understand the ticker there. Crypto Mirrors Silver. I have seen scenarios where silver sells off in tandem with crypto, with tech stocks, like, for example, during April when we had the taco meltdown over the tariffs. Everything sold off in that scenario. So that's a cautionary tale, right? The deflationary bust, metals would not be spared in that scenario, would they, Bob?
No, when you're talking about liquidity, and the scary part is if open interest is now starting to finally rise on silver futures contracts, yeah, that brings in more leverage. Yes, it pushes the price up initially, but yes, if you do get some type of liquidity sell-off, anything tied to leverage and margin can be impacted. And that's where you're right. Silver price could actually, fall in that regard.
But I would add the inevitable response to any liquidity event is always more easy monetary policy, which tends to be rocket fuel for metals coming out of that. So also a buying opportunity, typically. Now, this is an interesting thought here. We've got a president here, Bob. Why do you think Trump hasn't commented on metals? We got a president who owns a gold toilet, which has doubled in value in the last year. He's got his golden fleet, his golden dome, his golden era. Everything is gold. He has not said one word about the price of gold or the price of silver over these last few months. Is that a coincidence, or does he not want to draw attention to it?
Well, I think one of his sons actually is represents one of the gold dealers out there, if I'm not mistaken. I forget which one it was, but he's one of the, I guess, an ambassador or endorsement for one of the gold dealers out there. The Trump family certainly has interest in the metals, that's for sure. And definitely, I mean, he lavishes the Oval Office and the White House with a lot of gold. So he obviously likes it. So,
Do you think the paper Ponzi, this is Jesse James here, do you think the paper Ponzi shorting scheme done by the big banks in the COMEX is failing? Are we seeing the physical market driving price now? I think we answered that already, that this is actually purely paper market driven, this bull rally. But I have seen in the last couple of weeks, a lot of people have mentioned, especially around options expiration this month, that it looked like the banks had capitulated on their shorts and gone long. Is there any truth to that, Bob? Have you seen any?
you have to understand that social media and the promoters and dealers have done an absolutely poor, piss poor job in explaining this to investors in the precious metals. The banks were some of the biggest buyers of physical metal going into this year, especially in December. They were big buyers, and you have to remember when they take big positions, they also hedge. The banks are not what they call secular type traders. They work more on spreads and margins than they do on a particular price movement. So when they took big physical positions, they hedge that with shorting futures contracts. And as they remove that physical inventory, as they distribute that inventory, for example, to other players, and they'll in tandem reduce their short exposure as well, because those two go hand in hand. That's actually what's been happening. And so this is nothing new. This is everything I was expecting. In fact, back in 2022, I was doing interviews and publicly saying that what was end up going to drive the metals higher was going to be a deleveraging event. And Basel III was part of that deleveraging type of event. But yeah, this has been what you just basically explained was just basically the banks distributing metals, reducing position sizes. You see it with the COMEX, you see it with reduction of the amount of ounces coming out of the COMEX, and then you see that reduction of short positions. Those two work in tandem.
Jeff Vogel, not a lot to say, just being a swell guy. Thank you so much, Jeff, for supporting the channel. And we have a celebrity in the house, Bob. We have got the one and only Jay Bravo is here. And I thought I heard a hydraulic press a few minutes ago. I could have swore I heard one. So let me just say, cue the fire, sell your Bitcoin. Thoughts? Let me do my Johnny Bravo. Thoughts on selling all of my silver and buying a new surfboat with it? All right. My Bravo needs work. Sorry, Bravo. Why do you need a new surfboat, Johnny? Did you what'd you do? Hit some rocks and then break the ski, leave the ski outstretched on the holder and then pull into the dock piling so it smacked it and sheared the pin off of that thing? What'd you do? Bring a bunch of YouTubers out on your boat and they did like $25,000 worth of damage to it in one afternoon? Is that what happened? Is that why you need a new surfboat, Bravo? True story. and then what else? We got clogged. We jammed up his intake with seaweed. I had to go diving, swim under Bravo's boat and clear his intake. And then I, just to round out the trip perfectly well, I left my backpack behind at the club and we had to burn a half a tank of gas to circle around and go back and get it. That's when we went out on Bravo's surf boat. So Bravo, you're probably going to have to sell your silver just to repair the damages that we did the last time you let us on your boat. I don't think you should do that again. That was ill-advised. I don't know what you were thinking. Thank you, Bravo, for showing up. Love the channel, brother. Check out Johnny Bravo's channel while you're at it, guys, at Jay Bravo. All right, we got to do the lightning round because we've been going a long time here, and they're coming in faster than we can go through them. Steve Wojtas says, TFH, could it be that certain producing countries are running up the price in these thin holiday markets only to dump a ton on the markets on Monday? Could that be? Do countries really trade like that, or does it really play out that way?
Not really. I mean, you'd have, especially not going into a very lightly traded environment. It's one thing, you know, back in 2008, and this was an interesting factoid, you had the IMF announce, I think it was 2008 or 2009, I forget which year it was, but the IMF announced it was going to sell a third of its gold holdings. And India, the day India announced, this was after 2000, and so this is going into 2009. India announced that they were the ones buying it from the IMF, and they bought it at around, I think, $1,049 an ounce. And ultimately, what was interesting is when gold shot up to ultimately $1,980, whatever that it went up to in 2011, when it pulled back, where it found its base or the bottom was the same price India bought that third of what IMF was selling, $1,049. So, these aren't countries move in a much larger and longer term time frame.
All right, India putting a floor on gold. I didn't know about that. That's interesting. Thanks again, by the way, Steve. And thank you, Frank. Says, Bob, since you called the platinum back in May, let's put that back up there because that, Bob, was just a monster call back on May 13th when you made that call on platinum. I know you weren't trying to time the market like that, but that was pretty good. What do you see for the longevity of the upside? Are you still long platinum? Do we still have room to go here?
I haven't sold strategically anything of the fund from that standpoint. Still about 70, well, the weightings probably have changed a little bit. Going into December, I think it was about 75% silver, 22% gold, 3% platinum. Obviously, would platinum go, platinum to silver up, 40% this month? I mean, it's just unbelievable. Obviously, the weightings are going to shift a little bit. But that was my expectation, was that the white metals would play that catch up to gold. That with platinum, obviously, it's a very, very small market. And this thing, like we saw in the last week, I mean, you saw platinum zoom up, drop $170 an ounce. I think it was on Tuesday, And then, and then go straight up, today or yesterday and today to break all-time new highs again. I mean, that is what you call volatility. And so it's very, very difficult, to try to game that, especially from a trader's perspective, you just get whipped out of your position. So, I think that's why I buy physical holdings, because to me, I think you have to have some degree of you can't be too close to the sell button all the time. It's sometimes that volatility will shake you out. And having that physical metal, I think, gives you that sort of, it's a little bit tougher to bail on the position type of situation than just owning an ETF.
Again, monster call on platinum. Now, this is a topic I was wondering if this was going to come up on this stream. And Chester, can I call you Chester? He says, can you look for source of Asian AI guy silver videos? I can look for that. I have no idea who the Asian AI guy silver video is, but that came up before we went live, didn't it, Bob? What's your thoughts on, I have seen this, a lot of people have sent me this slop, this AI generated Asian guy in these silver videos. I watched one or two of them. I got a few minutes into it and I shut it off. I, What's your thoughts on this? Is there any accuracy to these videos going around, or is it just garbage?
It's garbage. There's so much crap. That's why we were talking about earlier, there's so much crap going around on the internet and on social media. And a lot of these promoters latch on to it. Dealers latch on to it. Guys that are excited about the market latch on to it as another reason to go long, whatever it may be. But for the investor that's just trying to analyze and be objective about this, yeah, it's entertainment. I guess you could call it that. But beyond that, there's absolutely very little value in it. And that's the unfortunate thing, is that sometimes people will predicate a very large purchase on the idea that, my God, this thing must be real if it's on the internet, where that is the tipping stone to get them over the, that hurdle to go ahead and finally buy, where that dealer will use that as a motive to get them to close that deal. And it's unfortunate because a lot of this stuff just gets recirculated, picked up by some popular channels. They talk about it, and it's the old adage, the more you talk about it, the more it becomes true, I guess. And that's a difficult thing about the precious metals world, is that I think a lot of conservative investors, we already are very distrustful of the system altogether anyway. These AI videos come in and they know exactly the wedge and where to apply that pressure to get us to sort of say, okay, is this real? That's the unfortunate thing about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, and I would just say, folks, you're usually, gold and silver investors tend to be very skeptical by nature. And I would say, don't let go of that just because somebody gets you to yes on some other topic, right? A lot of these videos, they'll start with something that is generally very widely accepted as true, get you into an agreeable state, and then take you someplace crazy with it. So don't let go of that skepticism that has taken you to precious metals to begin with, just because somebody says something that you agree with, and then, okay, the sky is falling here, take my retirement account. Be careful, because there's just as many sharks in this space, in the metal space, as there are in stocks. Maybe not as much in crypto. I mean, that's shark infested waters, but you get my point. There's sharks everywhere, guys. Thank you again, Chester. Thank you, Mr. Green, for becoming a Melonhead member, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much. We're almost through these here, guys. I know we've been going a while. Nacho Man says, thanks, Jack. Great to hear, Bob. You guys rock. Thank you so much, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. U.S. Mint sells coins below value. This is from SWFL Buck. Do you know anything about that, or has the Mint just forgotten to update their price because the price has risen so fast and the Mint didn't? You can't even buy direct from the Mint, can you, for your
Eagles? You can buy collectors and numismatic type product proofs, that type of thing, I believe, on their site. But yeah, the bullion stuff, you have to go through a distributor for that. So what they could be referring to is the Mint, typically, like Silver Eagles, I believe, is $3.05 over spot is what they sell to distributors. But the secondary Silver Eagles, have been cheaper than the new stuff. And the secondary stuff isn't really, that's not really put out by the Mint. That just, maybe inventory that a distributor of the Mint may have in stock. I don't know if that's what they're referring to.
Very possible. Yep. There's some great deals out there. I did see premiums took a jump up today, especially in Silver Eagles. They went as high as $9 at one point today at the cheapest. I have not seen that in over a year. So
what a rip. I have to say, this industry has just been ripping people off. I mean, this has been getting really bad, where these retail dealers are jamming premiums up. Like, I saw this in October with all these big online guys and all these celebrity gold dealers saying, hey, we're the best out there, we have the greatest program, and what they're doing is they jam these premiums up when public comes in, and when the public's not in, you can look at some of these big online guys and they're $5.60 under spot for silver rounds to buy back. And these are dealers that have depositories that claim they have the greatest program in the world, so to speak. Yet when the client buys the metal and stores it with that dealer, all of a sudden the dealer is trapped that transaction and the client can't go to anybody else to sell that metal to. And that should be something I think the industry really needs to curtail, and because it's not going to build a really firm foundation once people start to realize, wait a second, not only they have probably paid too much, but now when I go to sell, I'm going to get how much less than spot? And so you have to overcome these spreads. And people that bought Silver Eagles, I mean, there's some of these big online dealers that are paying $3 under spot for Silver Eagles. You know, they pay $10 over and they're getting $3 under. That's a $13 move. You just have to overcome just to break even, let alone trying to make money in this market. And that's something that I'm not seeing a lot of. There's a lot of good dealers out there, don't get me wrong, and a lot of good coin shops out there that do a wonderful job. But the marketing and advertising that this space, how they placate to, it's not regulated. There's no compliance. There's no oversight. It's basically buyer beware, unfortunately. And now it's turned into not just buyer beware, but seller beware.
Sad, but yeah, I did notice, especially today, maybe a lot of people went back to for Christmas and had conversations with relatives, and they don't normally watch out for things like premiums, and they just took advantage of that and raised the price on a day that the price was skyrocketing anyway. Thanks again, SWFL. Jeff Vogel says, where does the arbitrage margin with China come in? We kind of talked about that quite a bit at the beginning of the show. I do think that is the biggest driver of this rally that was purely driven by paper markets today. Bob, let me just ask you, and for the short version of this one, can this arbitrage, this paper ruckus going on in China, can it bleed into the physical market? And what would it take for that to happen?
Oh, easily. I mean, you can have a situation. You have to remember, what goes up can come down. And for a lot of us that saw the markets over the last 20 years in the silver market, you know, we saw what 2011 did. We saw, you know, the breakdown in 2013, the futures markets breaking down all of a sudden, you know, that started to grind down, activity and so forth. So refiners didn't have the, you know, you saw the coin and bar market start to decline going into 2017, 2018, 2019. And you couldn't give this stuff away. So yeah, the price action can definitely have an impact short term on not just sentiment, but also the mindset of investors that bought this stuff. And now that the price is not going up and it's going down, what do I do with it? And the easiest thing to do is you sell it. And that's the unfortunate thing about the markets and volatility and so forth. And that's why, you know, you want to be very sort of cautious with any market you get into. Just understand that volatility before you take dive in with both feet.
All right. And we got Richard Bell. We've got two more of these and then we're going to cut it off. Richard Bell, thank you, sir. He says, copper supply demand. All right. Not sure what specific the question is there, but let me just give you like 30 seconds on that and then I'll let Bob take a crack at it. A lot of silver comes from copper mines. The higher silver price doesn't necessarily mean much more silver is going to come out of mines. There are some silver mines that will make more silver next year because there's money to be had there. Copper price is also much higher right now, making records here. However, I don't think there's going to be much more copper supply next year. There's a lot of geopolitical chaos in copper mining countries. There's been some very high profile, very large copper mines have shut down because of things like landslides and collapses. So even though the prices are higher, I don't think we'll get more copper coming out of the ground, and therefore I don't think we'll get much silver coming out of the ground as a result of that. I think the thing to watch with supply and demand in metals next year is the recyclers and the refiners. They're operating at capacity. I think there's going to be a lot more recycling supply next year, and you can tell because they're turning away junk silver because they have more than enough of the 3-9 fine stuff to melt down right now. So that's my real quick take on supply and demand. Anything you want to add to, or did I say anything you disagree with there, Bob?
Yep, yeah, that was perfect.
Nailed it. Yes. That's it. I should just stop there. I can only make it worse from there. But we got one more. Jesse James. Thank you, sir. He says, Bob, can you talk about how to exercise discipline in the market and also how to avoid fraudulent offerings? Thank you. You've already done a few of those. What else you got?
Yeah. Just try to read as much as possible. A lot of these agreements, User agreements, storage agreements, structured programs, you just try to read as much as you can. If you don't understand it, try to reach out to others or your attorney or accountant to try and make sense of, hey, what does this clause mean? What does that clause mean? Unfortunately, in the precious metals world, especially in the mining side, you tend to see when prices go up, there's more of a giddiness or more of a, hey, listen, you kind of let the guard down and, you listen to the mining experts say, or the mining company CEO say, listen, we got X number of ounces in the ground. All we got to do is pull it out and it's bank. But what they don't tell you is the cost to produce that stuff, to pull it out of the ground, how long it's actually going to take. And now you're just trading ounces in the ground. And so, and that's a trap that a lot of mining investors got into after the 2000 sort of 2011 run up, where a lot of mining companies just pissed away a lot of money, basically. And ultimately the prices grounded down in terms of the commodity prices, and a lot of these mining companies just went broke. And then they had to do secondary offerings and more dilution, and that was a game that basically hurt a lot of mining investors that many are still trying to come back from. I think try to understand what you're getting into. These contracts are designed by attorneys for the benefit of those sponsors of those programs. Try to look for something that's more neutral, maybe somewhat client friendly, but from what I'm seeing in this industry, there is more and more clauses of waiver of jury trial clauses, waiver of class action suit clauses, limits of liability clauses, hold harmless agreements. These are things you need to watch out for when looking at any of the stuff, and especially when it comes to some of these structured or allocated programs.
And I'll just add one thing, if you're talking to one of these guys in one of these programs and they try to steer you into high premium collectible items, run, do not walk for the exits. All right. If you are investing, there's a difference between being a collector and being an investor. All right. They are two totally different things. And if you see a salesman using fear tactics, oh, the collectibles won't be taken by the government or this or that, I can tell you right now, the collectible coins, the values is gone in them. The collectors are sitting out this bull run in metals. Coins that were going for $3,000 or $4,000 above melt value a few years ago are selling for about $10 above melt value right now. So if you bought into those coins years ago, you have not made any money in this rally. You're just breaking even now after this historic rally. So if they're trying to put you into collectibles, run, do not walk for the exits. That's just my personal opinion on that matter. Well, Bob, we have been running very long. I know this is a day after a holiday. I really want to thank you for sharing your wisdom and your expertise with us and your experience. Let's do this again. Let's do this a lot, Bob, shall we? Let's keep having these.
I tell you, it makes the holiday season so much more festive.
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to be festive in such circumstances. And I also want to thank all you viewers who gave super chats and supported the channel. Thank you guys for submitting your questions. Thank you also to the mods for showing up unannounced. I appreciate that. They were drinking from the fire hose. A lot of comments today. Once again, guys, that's Bob Coleman. He is the CEO of Idaho Armored Vault. I am going to put a link. I didn't do it yet. I should have done it before I went live, but we did this on the spot. I'm going to put a link to his website and his Twitter feed at Profits Plus ID on Twitter. You definitely should be following Bob on Twitter. He is one of the best. When you see something happening in the metals market, that should be your first stop. It's mine. Every time I see something happen in gold, I go look to Bob's Twitter feed for what's going on. And if it's not there, I'll just DM him, ask him. So thank you, Bob, again. Everybody else, Merry Christmas. Have a happy new year. We'll be back Monday. We'll be back Sunday night for the Patreon Zoom for those who we didn't have that today because of the holiday. And everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.